So 7:32, and US President Donald Trump and Prime Minister Shinzo Abe showed off their personal relationship last weekend, as I briefly mentioned, meeting at a Northern Virginia golf course, sharing their love for the sport. But after that round, Trump said at a campaign rally, the US is defending wealthy countries that can well afford to pay Washington, adding there's one country, I don't want to say it, I don't want to embarrass anybody, I called the country, they paid us more than $500 million more for one phone call. I'm not bragging. Many speculate the country that he was referring to, given the context, was actually South Korea. And that despite, of course, also there being a few potentially thorny issues between the US and Japan, also on costs and how much he feels Asian allies actually bring to the party. Let's bring in Scott Seaman, Asia Director of Eurasia Group, for further discussion. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And this, I think we probably should establish, comes really amid tricky ties between Seoul and Tokyo. And the US has, in recent history, had to play this role, if not as mediator, then certainly trying to just stay on decent terms with both sides and maintain some sort of trilateral front against North Korea and others. How has this relationship been affected recently? For example, with Seoul and Tokyo having to deal with that ban on Japanese fishery imports with the World Trade Organization, South Korea seemed to be targeted by Japan when many other countries have followed a similar restriction.
Well, as you mentioned, in the past, the U.S. has been willing and able to provide some help when Japan and South Korea go through some rocky diplomatic times. They're both key allies, and of course, the U.S. has a keen interest in ensuring that their relationship is good. Unfortunately, the Trump administration just does not seem as eager to play that role. It's likely because Trump does not see it as important as perhaps past administrations. And so that kind of leaves a vacuum for Japan and South Korea to engage on their own, and sometimes the dynamics around that are not so great.
The fact that in its latest diplomatic blue book, Japan said the relationship with South Korea had faced a very difficult situation due to a series of negative actions by South Korea, does that indicate actually that Japan is much more upset than even those words would indicate?
I think the unfortunate thing is that for both President Moon and Prime Minister Abe, a somewhat troubled relationship, a bilateral relationship that's somewhat troubled, is actually politically good for both of them. It plays well to domestic crowds. President Moon, of course, is watching his support ratings drop. Prime Minister Abe is heading towards elections in July. So even if both men really want to keep this relationship on an even keel, there are incentives for them to kind of stir the pot and gain some benefits back home by acting tough.
President Moon Jae-in has been particularly conciliatory with North Korea, continuing to be patient, holding three summits last year with Chairman Kim Jong-un, openly pushing for another summit in the near future. I mention it as a comparison because many people would suggest that he needs to get together with Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. What are the prospects of that happening?
So if you're talking about President Moon and Prime Minister Abe, I think that they likely will get together in some form on the margins of the G20 summit in Osaka at the end of June. They may not want to play that up ahead of time, but I think it would probably be very unusual if they did not sit down one-on-one at some point and talk through at least some of the sticking points in the relationship. So I certainly hope that happens. Abe, of course, would also like to have a summit meeting at some point with Kim in North Korea, but right now the diplomatic situation really doesn't provide much room for that.
And with Seoul's foreign ministry denying a Kyodo News report that Seoul had requested a summit between the leaders on the sidelines of that Osaka meeting, that and many other incidents over the last few years, suggests that it almost looks rather childish. The tit for tat, the comments backwards and forwards, no one really wanting to look like the one that's relenting. Again, in stark contrast to what Seoul's prepared to do in North Korea. How does diplomacy descend to this level?
Wow, that is the big question. I think in Northeast Asia, why South Korea and Japan are not able to get along better. Obviously, it has historical roots that are extremely deep. I myself often have difficulty talking about it with either South Koreans or Japanese because of the sensitivities around everything. But my general view is that in Japan, it is not so much that Japanese deny what happened during World War II, during the occupation of South Korea and North Korea, but more that more and more people in Japan are simply not of an age that makes them feel responsible for what happened. So I would love to see a situation where South Korea recognizes that Japanese people don't deny what happened, but maybe don't feel as much personal responsibility as South Koreans would like.
Of course, as you say, it's just such a sensitive issue that many people would want to jump in there and talk about the Japanese refusal at the highest level of government to acknowledge sincerely or fully the atrocities of the past, even if past Japanese officials have been more willing to do so. At this point, I'd like to just open that up to our listeners so that everyone can feel like they can have their say on that. #1013 for 51 per message. Because, Scott Seaman, I think it's important that we are able to have a reasonable conversation about these things and that expert guests like yourself are able to say what you feel, having studied the topic, without being drawn into personal attacks. But let's just continue this discussion from the US perspective as well. Is the US in danger of showing a little bit too much sugar in the Japanese direction? You've got Trump hosting Abe for golf and then very swiftly making these very veiled comments, which seem to be about South Korea.
I don't think so. If anything, I think the impression in Japan is that Abe has bent over backwards to try to please Trump and really has walked away with very little to show for it. Yes, they play golf. Yes, they seem to have a reasonably good personal relationship. But the problem is that I think Abe maybe overestimates his influence over Trump. And we have seen on several occasions where Trump has said that, you know, Abe, I like you. You're a good guy. I, you know, love to play golf for you or with you. But when it comes to trade, when it comes to defense spending, when it comes to any of those issues, that personal relationship really doesn't get Abe much mileage. So, you know, I think that there is little danger, at least from the Japanese perspective, that the U.S. is going to be too soft on Japan, and I think the same goes for South Korea as well.
That's an interesting distinction to make, but do you feel that actually, while Trump did seem to be talking about South Korea with that figure of $500 million more, that the tone of his comments could also easily have applied to Japan, given that in the past he's also been pretty clear that he wants Japan to contribute more?
Oh, absolutely. I think the Japanese were watching the negotiations last year between the U.S. and South Korea to come to a compromise on some additional cost burden sharing on the South Korean side. And the Japanese will be facing the same sort of negotiations later this year. We know that Trump is very keen to get more money out of the Japanese as well. And it's an extremely sensitive topic in Japan as well as South Korea. For Abe to be dealing with, for example, people in Okinawa that are very opposed to the military bases, and then on top of that having a demand from the U.S. to pay more money to station those troops there, that's just not the kind of political situation that Abe wants to see. So the Japanese, as I mentioned, have watched what happened with South Korea very closely and are hoping to avoid the same fate, but I doubt it.
I'm sure the U.S. doesn't want South Korea and Japan to be on particularly bad terms. But on the other hand, if, and this is a ridiculous if, considering everything we've talked about already this morning, but if we were to see South Korea and Japan actually get very close together, they could probably engineer a situation where they get a bit more power together than they have apart when it comes to talking to the US about various security and economic issues.
I would think from the perspective of South Korea and Japan, that would be an extremely good situation if they were able to close ranks, and that gave them more leverage in dealing with the U.S. Hopefully, over time, the U.S. may shift back to a softer stance, a more cooperative stance with allies in the region. But I think you're right that it would behoove both Japan and South Korea to try to work together and push back on U.S. demands. I remember one example just I'll mention quickly, and that's there was a plan for Japan and South Korea to work together as large purchasers of LNG to try to leverage their demand and get lower prices. I don't think that worked out, but that would be an example, you know, a very concrete example of what the two countries together could possibly do.
Yeah, and it's also a concrete example of the economy or trade being allowed to lead the way at a time when we're getting nowhere on human rights and historical discussions.
Absolutely, and I think the other area where I would like to see more cooperation is on aging. You have two countries that are facing very similar demographic problems. Japan's a little bit ahead of South Korea along that trend, but it really is an opportunity for both countries to learn from each other and to tackle that problem together.
Just briefly, what about security, though? We haven't talked today about the radar dispute that South Korea and Japan have been having. We're supposed to be, if not close military allies, at least bonded in some way in the face of this North Korea threat. But instead, it seemed more likely, if anything, that there'd be a flashpoint between South Korea and Japan, even if the likelihood is not particularly high.
Yes, I definitely watched that with some alarm. I thought, you know, why in the world are these two countries squabbling with each other when they have much bigger fish to fry with North Korea and the U.S. for that matter? I'm hoping that there is a lot more cooperation, military to military, behind the scenes than we know of. In other words, even if there are some high-profile incidents that indicate friction between Japan and South Korea, I do hope that there's a lot of cooperation that we're not seeing, and that's going on, and you know, is quite healthy.
Well, this requires a president in the shape of Moon Jae-in now to stand up and lead, even if it means perhaps making unpopular decisions at this point. He doesn't have to worry about another term. He's not allowed to have another term. How much progress can he make? Pound a sharp 1013 for 51 per message. How far would you be prepared to see the president go in building that relationship with Japan? For now, Scott Seaman, Asia Director of Eurasia Group, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
The time, 7:46. Let's get to our news bite with Gina Yu.